Welcome to the Choose to Be podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Where healing begins with you, and we're here to support you along the way.
I'm excited for our listeners to get to know you, Jess, and know what you can offer them. So I love the topic that we're talking about today, shame, and specifically the shame that comes around for those of you that are choosing to stay. So welcome, Jess. Just really quickly, Jess Kovic is one of our coaches, and she is certified through the Life Coach School. And I think you share the same love of empowering women and helping empower people to use their agency to be the choosers in their life. And with the Life Coach School, I'm familiar with many of their coaches, but it's so cool to see people, right, Jess, who like start to understand that they actually do have some control over their thoughts and their feelings and their actions more than we ever thought, more than we ever realized. And so it's really a beautiful job that we have. So glad you're on the team. Glad you're here so that everyone can get to know you. Let's go ahead and dive into it wherever you feel comfortable starting. But I think the question that I first have, Jess, is what do you notice most in clients? And we'll just go ahead and start with the betrayed partners around their shame. Where do you see that show up the most?
Yeah, it's so widespread, and shame just in general is so toxic that it really takes you down. But I see it a lot with the clients that I work with that are suffering through betrayal trauma in misplaced shame, like the shame that they take on from everyone else, that they take on from their partner, from their partner's actions, and the shame that everybody kind of dumps on them. And then they just assume, I have to carry that and this is mine. So that you should have left, you should stay, you have to work on this, or what are you doing? All comes from other people's stuff, right? Like their experiences. So this is especially at a time where you're so vulnerable going through betrayal and your life's been turned upside down. You don't know what's up from down. And it's really easy to just take that on and go, okay, I guess, all right, that's me. Okay, I have to carry that too, when you're carrying so many other burdens.
Interesting, because the thought that comes through my head is these people so often come through this lens of wanting to be helpful, wanting to give advice, seeing your pain and wanting to try to help fix that. And I would venture to guess that more often than not, they would be shocked, appalled, maybe offended to realize or recognize that they are contributing to the shame, which is why I think as individuals, it's so important that we can even just slow down enough to recognize what shame is when I'm feeling it, so we can see it when it's coming towards us.
Yeah, people are so well-intended, and it is coming usually from a place of love or just a place of not understanding, but oh man, I've gotten so much unsolicited advice in my own journey, like for a long time. And it's still on my kind of bucket list to do. I thought of writing a book called Not Helping for all of the things that people, they're so helpful. They want to give you all this advice and it's not helping. It's not helping me. So still, it's on the list. I might get to it someday.
I love it.
And do you mind, if you're comfortable with this, sharing some of the examples of this quote unquote help that was not helping?
Yeah, at least for me, I have great family and friends that I love and adore, and I know love and adore me, but so much so that it was really protective. They didn't want me to be hurt ever. And obviously when you go through this journey, you're hurting loudly, bleeding all over the place, and they want it to stop. So they're like, you just move on. You get away from this thing that is hurting you. And that's it. And it's cut and dry, but really it's cut and dry for them because they think they can package you up and then just send you on your way, and you're not hurting anymore. You're not bleeding. Of course, that's not the case. And to think about a literal package, you're bleeding through it, right? It's not as clean as that. So it's usually like, we want to protect you. We don't understand. We don't want to see you hurting. So just move on. You won't hurt if you move on. You can just start anew. And many people in my life didn't really understand the process that you have to go through anyway. Like, either way, you still have to do your individual work and your individual healing. So it's not that simple. It's not like, oh, I'll feel better if I just go date someone else or if I just move on with my life. And that's the confusion that people don't see unless they're in it. And they want to just kind of like throw out all your investment because it's more comfortable for them.
I almost think too, just backing it up even more, the shame that I think originally starts to take hold is the secrecy. Because I think a lot of us live in that secrecy, that silence, are silenced or stay silent about what is happening. And that breeds shame. So before we even tell close, safe people about what's happening and that should I stay or should I go, and we're getting all of this feedback and that can create shame. I think underneath that has already been layers and layers of shame by staying silent and quiet about it.
This topic right here has been on my mind all week. So it's so interesting you bring this up, because for so many of us who have been betrayed, we have all of these secrets come out with our partner, and there's such pain with that around secrecy. And then because of the shame of what they did and all of these internal messages that often by default we make about us, which that's part of our work to unravel that. But then we go into that almost this place of, I have to hide. But because hiding has been so painful, then it feels so inauthentic. And so then I see so many women feel like they're almost lying in the rest of their life.
Yeah.
And so then there's this challenge of, okay, am I being secretive or am I being private? And then trying to navigate all of that while unraveling the shame can be so challenging. And even that can bring on more shame around, why can I not just be myself? I don't know if that came out in a way, just other than this idea of the hiding and secrecy has been so on my mind this week with a few clients.
Yeah. I feel like the individual recovery is the journey to authenticity, especially with betrayal trauma. Because just like you said, like many of my clients and myself included, you're putting on a brave face for a lot of it, that either some stuff isn't right or you don't know exactly what it is, but it doesn't feel right. Maybe from how you're trained or your family of origin is, I have to have this veneer that everything's okay and just power through. That's the way I was. I was very, very conflict avoidant and in my relationship and in all relationships. So it was like, oh, well, we're not fighting. Everything's great and no one notices and we can just power through. And I know when I experienced the big discovery where it's like, okay, the record stops, you have to pay attention to this. So much of my thinking was, if we could just deal with this in private, if we can just push it under the rug a bit, we'll figure it out and I'll keep that brave face on and this is fine. I always say there's that meme of the little dog with all the flames behind it. And it's like, this is fine. I feel like I'm the epitome of that little dog. So I had to unlearn that a lot. But all my thoughts were like, if I could just go back to yesterday and keep everything in control, I can do it. I'm strong. And keep everything under wraps. So then no one will know and we'll just deal with it privately. But God, universe has other plans for you and you have to follow that and the better for it. But the journey to authenticity, it's for the best, but not something I think we've asked for, because there's that tendency to like hide all the stuff and have the pretty picture, the Instagram reel, the perfect house, perfect family kind of thing that you want everybody to see until the cracks start to show.
I remember the first time with the book, The Gifts of Imperfection, and Brené Brown talks about how perfectionism is shame. Because I remember when I first started learning about shame, I was like, I don't really have shame. Yeah, that what that meant is I knew nothing about shame. But the first time I really recognized that shame in myself, like really did, was around that drive to be perfect, that drive to put on the front, and learning how much shame is in that. So I almost heard you say moving out of shame is moving more into that authenticity.
Yeah. I read a really great quote recently through this other art book I was reading, and I was like, whoa, this really applies to betrayal trauma and everything that I've gone through in my story. And I have post-its all over my monitor of things that I just keep in mind, especially as I'm working with clients. But it's You need to claim the events of your life to make yourself yours. That's Ann Wilson Schaeff, who I think is a psychologist. And I was like, whoa, that really struck me as owning all your stuff and all the stuff that we want, all the icky stuff through betrayal that we don't want to be part of our story. We don't want anybody to know about. You can't make your life yours unless you accept that and really go, okay, this happened to me. It doesn't have to define me forever, but there it is.
I don't think you can make your life yours until you make yourself yours. And that's what shame gets in the way of, is that sense of worthiness, because it's this idea that I'm not good enough. And shame hits at that core, why it's different than guilt. So I'm not good enough. Hence what you're saying, Alana, like that perfectionism, because if I'm perfect, if I'm good enough here, then I'm of worth and value. And so ultimately, when we're doing our healing work, it is unpacking all of the layers that are covering the core. And that is that you at your core are enough and of 100% of worth and value, no matter what. But this is what shame gets in the way of seeing and doing that work. So it's interesting because you'll see a lot of women and men in their recovery, it's shame as well, but they'll do all of these outside layer things that are still good and hard. But then when they find themselves stuck, like if I have a client that comes to me and she's like, it's been years and I still find myself looping, it's because there's still this layer of shame that's keeping her from really getting her connecting back to herself and seeing herself.
Yeah. You mentioned the difference between shame and guilt. I feel like shame is the lies, the narrative of lies that we tell ourselves that keep us saying, we talk about it with the betrayer side, where they get stuck in that shame of, oh, I'm bad. I might as well just be bad and do all the bad things. But these are the lies that infect and drive the fear, actions out of fear. For someone that has betrayed or is struggling with addiction or compulsion, it's like, well, I might as well because I'm bad. And the shame maybe on the betrayed side is, I deserve this, those lies, or his actions or their actions are a reflection on me. It's because I wasn't enough somehow, or it's because I didn't matter. Like all these lies that we sit with until we start to unravel and go, maybe that's not true. Maybe that there can be a different narrative here. I tell my clients, give the shame back to who it belongs to. And not that I want anybody to sit in shame, but we take on so much, like we were saying before, of other people's stuff. So if someone betrayed and acted out of their own value system, give that back to them. Let them process through that. That's not anything that you did. Work through your own stuff. And we take on so much of like, oh, well, they did that. Now I have to sit in this story of the muck and like my perfect veneer is gone. But it's like, wait, you didn't do anything. Why do you have to be ashamed?
It sounds like such a simple concept, but depending on how deep that shame goes and how many years we have been in it, some people for a lifetime because of their family of origin. Some people through the whole course of their relationship. And so what you just said there for our listeners, rewind and listen to it again, because it's so essential. And please be so gentle with yourself, because it's such a journey and such a process to unravel this. And even those women, like I'll have some who come and they're like, I have no shame. This is his. It was his. It's him. And while on the surface, they really do believe that, when they start doing some of that deeper level work, it is always interesting to me how deeply this hit parts of us that sometimes takes a while to access because it is so tender, and shame can run so deep because it hooks to that core of, am I enough? Or worthy of love, or worthy of connection.
Yeah. Going through, I would say it's the club no one wants to be part of. And we didn't ask to have to do any of this work. But there's something too, like you were saying, it hooks onto that core wounding that might not have been addressed. We're rattled to our core to have to start to address this. For me, I used to say, wow, this was my two worst nightmares wrapped into one. So it's the husband being unfaithful wrapped into the shame of, well, now you got to address it. And because unfortunately it was exposed publicly. So now it's not only you got to address this and you've got to face it without any like security blanket. You can't push it under the rug anymore. So now all your fears that of the unfaithfulness and not being able to cover it up, what do? So I had to be forced into the ceiling and be forced to address the stuff that I didn't even really know was there.
Can you tell us more about your experience, whether personal or as you work with clients, around the shame that comes up for those who choose to try to stay in the relationship and try and make it work?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it's those lies again. If we choose to stay, what does that mean about me? What kind of a person am I? In all the narratives of what ran through my head was, oh, well, you're weak. You aren't strong enough to move on. Or you don't think you can find better. And just society has all these messages of that's what strong women do. You put on a Beyonce album and you just march it right out the door and you go get another man. And so all these pressures of, well, what does it make me if I stay? A weak person, a stupid person. That these are the thoughts that ran through my head that I had to challenge and say, does that mean that? Oh, wait, I was manipulated. Oh, wait, it's a bigger story than just you didn't know and now you're accepting this behavior. I think that's where the shame sits too, is that if we want to heal and want to repair and move forward with our partners, then we're saying, well, this was okay, that this behavior can fly and it doesn't matter and we're just going to move forward. And maybe that's what we did. I know I did a lot of that before the big discovery was like, I don't want to look at it and didn't know what I didn't know. And then I knew what I knew. So I had no choice to look at it. And okay, we have a choice here. We can either go our separate ways and heal individually or not, or we can take a look at this, sift through the rubble, burn the whole house down and see what's worth moving to the next possibility. So if you're in it, if you're game to try to repair to see if it's possible, you're not accepting it. We burnt the house down. The house doesn't exist anymore. So we got to build a whole new foundation and move forward and change. And we're starting something totally new. So that narrative, for me, I had to work through debunking it that way to say, wait a minute, I didn't just stay and say this is okay. We started over. This is a new relationship. This is like a second marriage.
I love that, because what I heard you say in there is you are writing the new narrative. Mm-hmm. There's these fears of it will mean this if I stay and if it will mean this. But instead, you're saying, no, this is what it means for me. It means for me that I'm writing my story. I'm creating a new marriage. And so in essence, you're rejecting which ones don't fit for you and then owning what does. And I think about, there's no easy path here. You leave the marriage, it's hard. You stay in the marriage, it's hard. And so it's a matter of choosing your hard. And it's so unique on what that right answer is. I'll have clients sometimes want, and you know what? I wanted this in my therapist too. Of like, just tell me, is this unhealthy? Is this salvageable? Should I stay? Should I go? They won't tell me, because nobody can come to that place but you.
Yeah.
They can lead, they can guide, but ultimately it's me who has the pen who gets to choose what story I'm writing. And until I really owned that, I stayed pretty stuck.
I did the same thing. I wanted someone to tell me the answers or tell me this is normal, this is okay, or tell me the opposite, something definitive like, nope, there's no possible way. You can't fix this. There's no healing possible, or that this is one of those unforgivable situations. And yeah, no one would tell me that. I spent so much time Googling and searching for stories of people that had survived, couples that had healed and moved forward. what I was looking for was my exact story. Mm-hmm. And spoiler, never found it. That doesn't exist except for with me. There'd be like snippets that I'd take here and there. I'd go, okay, that's like this. But I wanted the playbook of, okay, this is exactly how you did it so that we can do it too. And I had to carve my own path. We had to carve our own path as a couple and do what worked for us. So, but I clung to that for a long time, looking for the answers or looking for the way to do it right, or the, this is normal. You're normal. You're okay.
You were talking about burn the house down, create a new relationship, start over there. And when you get your partner's buy-in to that, then you really are working on the individual, the coupleship. You're building something new inside you and together. And I also see shame show up for the ones who do leave because their partner either didn't buy in. And now the shame is, I'm not worth fighting for. So what's wrong with me that he didn't buy into this coupleship and repairing? Or you are a quitter. You're ruining the marriage. You're not strong enough to work it out. You should be strong enough to hang in there longer and work it out. So it's interesting how whatever decision, honestly, we make, recognizing how that shame is showing up in those thoughts and those messages that we're getting from both sides of the decision.
Yeah, it's those lies again, that narrative where we want to tell ourselves that this is somehow our fault.
Yeah. Like if it's me and something's wrong with me that he's not choosing me, then what can I do to be chosen? Yeah. What can I do? And so it's this sense of control, the sense of like, you know, these beautiful parts of ours that are like, well, if you turn on yourself and maybe fix something in there, then maybe you won't feel so awful. Hence why shame is such a stickler.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so heartbreaking. I went through it and I see clients go through it too, of we tear ourselves down as if we haven't been torn down enough by what we've been through betrayal.
Yeah. So how do you step out of this shame? As we're talking, I'm going, oh, shame in and of itself just carries a heaviness to it. Shame, almost like the more shame we have, the more it just weighs us down and keeps us stuck. So how do we shed that shame?
One of my favorite exercises that I did a lot and that I encourage my clients to do is just journal as much as possible, to do that journaling, that thought dump of just get it all out of your head without thinking about it, without judging it, and let all the negative thoughts, the negative narratives roll out without stopping yourself, and then go back to it and look at everything that you've written down and take a highlighter or take a pen and highlight or underline all the actual facts in it, all the things that are really true that can be proved in a court of law that everybody would agree on. And I surprised myself when I did it, how little was factual in it. And you want to argue it, right? You want to say like, oh no, but this is true. But when you take those rules of everybody has to agree on this, and it's like, well, okay, this isn't true. This is okay. This is all opinion. So it doesn't happen right away. I think you need to do that exercise a lot and really let it slowly start to unravel and start to realize, okay, there's no truth to this. And then you can invite opposing opinions in, like this happened because I wasn't a good wife or whatever. Maybe if I was sexier or prettier or whatever. And then you can start to introduce the thought, what if I was? What if I was perfect in my way and I didn't need to change anything and I am sexy and he couldn't see it? And introduce a lot more of those what ifs. Let your mind play a little bit.
I love that because it just makes me think of a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset. And a fixed mindset is just very much of, no, this is the way it is. And you think about how many things we're running off of that are based in shame or that are subconscious that we're running off of that we don't even realize because of socialization, conditioning, coping in a marriage or relationship that had these factors going on, whether we knew them or not. And so when we can really start to challenge and push and bring from the subconscious into the conscious and awareness, and then start challenging it, that's such a beautiful tool, Jess, because then it can help us move into that growth mindset.
Yeah. I love to asking, who said that? Whose voice is that? Because often it's not our voice. It's someone critical from our past, or maybe a character we've invented that is this really negative presence. And to identify and maybe even personify that as that's something else outside of me. That's not me. Where did I learn that? Who's telling me that? And do I have to believe it or not?
It can feel so true, these thoughts, these beliefs. And depending on where you're at in your journey, it's difficult to look at all of those on paper and go through and see which one is true and not true. And I love Brené Brown's antidote to shame, and it's empathy. And so having that empathy for yourself first, as you go into these tools that you can use to sort through and do more of that critical thinking, really allowing space for empathy of why you're feeling shame and stepping out of that judgment that we're in this space. I love her work on that. What's that book? I thought it was me, but it wasn't, or something like that. Yeah. It's a good one too.
Especially in a journey like betrayal. It's so layered. Every time I thought I had conquered my own shame, I got to another onion peeled layer of, oh, now there's shame around that.
Which kind of sucks. I just want to like,
oh, it sucks.
Every time I think that I'm good, I got this. And then you're like, ah, oh, crap.
Yeah, absolutely terrible. And I'll say for me as a coach, it was like the shame of this happened to me, like it's my fault, and working through that. And like, okay, I've got to get a handle. This wasn't my fault. This is getting a problem. And then the shame of staying. What are people going to think? What are my family? I have to brave through that and own my decisions. And then I was just talking with the group that I lead about shame. And there's another layer being a coach and working in this field. And one of the ladies was like, oh, well, how did you do it? Now you have to stand up and tell everybody I'm a coach in this space. And I was like, you know what? I'm still working through it. That's another layer of my own stuff of saying I work in this space. And then our mind goes wild of assumptions of what other people are thinking. And they may or may not be. But we again write these narratives of, oh, what are they going to think? And then I know the answer from my own coaching and own work on it, but I still struggle with it, is like, okay, let them. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. And why is this important to you? For me, doing this work is important for my own healing, to continue to reinforce these tools and these ideas, but also because I know how much it sucks and I know how many people are struggling with it and they need help. So to me, it's giving back. It's a service. I gain so much from the wisdom of other people that have been through it, other people that have done work on the subject. I dove headfirst and learned all this stuff. So I was like, what do I do with it? Well, I want to give it to other people and be of service. So is that more important to me than the shame of, oh, crap, people know that I went through this?
The amount of people who think that their coach or their therapist just now has it all together. And I get that, like wanting to believe that because there's comfort in that. And Amy and I were just talking about this last week when we were shooting the breeze forever and not recording our podcast. But we're talking about how people will come to us and be like, oh, you have it all figured out. Tell me what to do. And we are worlds ahead where we were when it first came out, and worlds ahead where we were the first year, 2 year, 3 year. And we're still human, having very human experiences. And with me being married to somebody who is very public with his story, and I'm public with my story, and as a couple, we're public, there is still that fear of, I have to keep that front of our marriage is good. Our marriage is better. And there's times where I wake up in the morning and I'm like, I hate this man. And then other times where I'm like, you are so cute. I want to squeeze your cheeks and I love you. And that's real. That's part of being human. But it's just interesting that, like you said, Jess, we do this work and we keep moving forward and we keep healing. And there's still parts of this that we will just keep having these human experiences with human brains, and shame at some level we will always have. Brené Brown talks about you don't stop having shame unless you are like a complete narcissist or have a personality disorder. You will still have shame, but you learn how to become shame resilient. Mm-hmm. You learn how to recognize the shame, work through the shame, shed layers of the shame, but we don't actually get to this place where I just have zero shame.
There's no arrival, and my clients hate it when I say that.
I would like an arrival, but yeah. No.
Yeah, I talk about this exercise, and I probably have of writing it down and underlining all the facts. And I probably shared that with every client I've ever had. And then after I have a session, go, oh, I haven't journaled in a while. I should do that. So just reminders that, you know, we're not perfect. We're still struggling. And that's why support is so, so important through this journey, is going to professionals that understand what this is, because they might be dealing with their own stuff, but they can have that barrier for your stuff. Groups are so important to be able to get that support and see that all these other amazing, beautiful people are dealing with similar things. Yeah, nobody's perfect. And yeah, there's no arrival.
So for those of you listening and you're going, want an arrival, I just remind you that Jess is not where she was at the beginning. Amy is not where she was at the beginning. I'm not where I was at the beginning. There is absolutely growth in moving forward, and have that compassion on yourself and throw away the arrival, because then you get to allow yourself to just be on this journey. So Jess, this has been such a helpful, good conversation. I don't feel like we talk about shame enough, especially where it is so deeply embedded in all of this. If you could leave, I don't know, a final thought or a message or a hope for those who have been with us during the conversation today, what would you want to leave?
I think about shame all the time with the work that I do and just doing my own work around it. So yeah, always game to talk about it and explore more. So super honored to be able to have this conversation today. But I would say probably a few things, and what I say a lot to my clients and remind myself is that give it back to who it belongs to. Let them process their own stuff around that shame, not letting believing the stories of what other people give to you. Like if they're coming with their own stuff, remember that they've got their own experiences, their own biases, their own way that they navigate the world. So challenge that and decide, does that have to be my story? Maybe they've been through it before and it turned out differently. So let it be your own story. And I think we're so fearful of the unknown, the uncertainty. And like I said, I wanted the playbook. I wanted to hear other people have done it. I wanted to feel normal, feel like, oh, this has happened before, so it's okay for me. So I just want to give everybody permission to write your own story. And if you're the first person that does it the way that you do it, or that you and your partner do it, if you decide to heal and reach help together, let that be okay. I know the unknown is scary, but a thought that really, really helped me in the beginning, especially as I was struggling with shame, deciding that I wanted to try with my partner and feeling judgment that I had imagined or judgment that was said to me, feeling like I had to appease everybody. And this thought came to me of, I can do whatever I want with this life. And I really hung on to that because it was like, I can start a new life and I can go travel the world and do it all by myself. Or I can decide to see if we're able to heal together. And that's my choice. And I can do whatever I want to do. And for some reason, that really released me into feeling like I had to do what was expected of me. So you can do whatever you want with your life. You have permission.
It was such a beautiful way to wrap up. You can do whatever you want with your life.
Yeah.
Well, Jess, thank you for hanging out with us. Thank you for being part of the conversation. Thank you for just giving of yourself. Jess is a coach with us at Choose Recovery Services. So I don't even know, Jess, if you have openings because people love you. I have a few women in my groups. I tell Jess this all the time, who are always singing your praises. But if you want to learn more about Jess, you can go jump on there. And again, thank you. And for all of you hanging out with us today, we are always honored that you choose to spend your time with us. So as always, thanks for hanging out with us, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
No matter where you are at in your healing journey, and we have a lot of you listeners that are in different places, the very essence of belief in yourself can often become tarnished or even worse, completely shattered. The belief that you are inherently strong, good, and whole and complete and enough just as you are can be really challenging to believe, which then makes it really challenging to believe that you can accomplish things, that you can make hard decisions, or that you can even make a decision. Questioning your own worth, doubting your abilities, and struggling to trust your own judgment is very often a consequence of betrayal trauma. And it's in these moments of self-doubt and uncertainty that my coaching program, Believing in You, becomes an invaluable compass for your healing and growth. I designed Believing in You for those that are ready to take your healing to the next level. Through this program, you're going to learn how to rebuild the foundation of self-belief brick by brick. You will get support in nurturing your ability to trust again, to have confidence in your decisions, and accept your intrinsic value as truth. With belief in yourself as your guiding star, you're not going to just survive, you're going to thrive. I would love to show you how. New membership openings will be available in 6 weeks, so you're gonna wanna get your spot now. They fill up very fast. Head over to the show notes to get the link to register. And if you're not sure if this is for you, if you're ready to take that next step, then book your consultation with me and we can chat. More than anything, Choose continues to support you in choosing recovery, in choosing to heal, and in choosing you. Take care, everybody.